Welcome and thank you for joining us on our This Week in State Tax podcast. My name is Harley Duncan and I'm with the state and local team in KPMG's Washington National Tax. On today's podcast, we're going to take a look at California Senate Bill 122, a budget trailer bill signed into law by Governor Newsom on June 29, 2026, as part of the Golden State budget for fiscal year 2027. Specifically, we're going to look at the changes the bill makes to the taxation of pre-written software in the state, as I think these changes are likely to affect every business that sells software into California, every business that purchases software in California, and every business that has software users in California. In short, it's a pretty big deal that deserves your attention if you're doing business in the El Dorado state. To help us understand Senate Bill 122 and its implications, we have with us Jim Kuhl, who's a director in our Sacramento KPMG office and our State Tax Resource Network specialist for indirect taxes in California. Jim has been with KPMG in Sacramento for 10 years and has prior to that spent 25 years with the California Board of Equalization, the agency which at the time was responsible for administration of the California Sales and Use Tax. That is now the responsibility of the California Department of Tax and Fee Administration, which for those of us who know it and love it, is commonly called CDTFA. So welcome, Jim.
Hey, Harley. Good to be with you today.
Before we begin, when we use the term software in the podcast, we're going to mean pre-written software. Custom software that's designed and developed for a single customer is and will remain non-taxable in California. With that out of the way, can you tell us what Senate Bill 122 does, Jim? What does it tax? What's different from the present? Why is it such a big deal?
Sure, Harley. California has historically limited the application of sales and use tax to tangible personal property. Intangibles have been broadly exempt from sales tax until now. While taxes always applied to pre-written software furnished in tangible form, going back to the days of tapes and floppy disks, as of January 1st, tax will apply to software that is downloaded or accessed remotely. This is big news in the state where the tech industry was born and remains a critical part of our economy today. The legislation is 44 pages long, so there's lots to work through, but we should be able to cover the key issues in our podcast today.
Well, thanks. And I'm sure California may not want to hear this, but in some ways, they're kind of catching up with steps a lot of states have taken, or a number of states have taken, with respect to the taxation of electronically downloaded and remotely accessed software. And I just read this morning again, remind me that Colorado will be doing the same thing in January 1. But as I read the bill, the tax imposition part was about two sentences long. Said, we're going to tax digital products. Digital products means electronically downloaded software and remotely accessed software. And then it had quite a list of exclusions. Jim, can you bring us up to speed on what exactly is excluded from the definition of downloaded and remotely accessed software?
Well, Harley, there are seven enumerated exemptions from the term digital product. First, there's digital assets, meaning cryptocurrency. Digital auto works are also exempt, including things like music and ringtones. Digital visual works are excluded, such as artwork, as are digital audiovisual works or movies. Digital books are excluded, and the final two exclusions are ones that not all states offer an exemption for: digital infrastructure and digital video game products. Digital infrastructure is defined by the statute as a cloud-based service provided remotely that allows a user to run their software on the provider's platform.
Those last two do differ in some regards from other states, specifically the digital video game that I think some states have simply said, well, if it's a multi-user game, that's just remotely accessed software. If you just download it to your own machine, it's downloaded software. When you're dealing with electronically delivered or remotely accessed software and other items in which there's no tangible item handed over, the question is always, how do I source the transaction? In other words, who gets to tax it? What's Senate Bill 122 tell us about this, Jim?
Well, Harley, the sourcing is going to be based upon the address provided by the customer. For those purchasers who have multiple addresses, there's a statutory hierarchy that states the sales tax is applied based upon the purchaser's billing address, followed by the shipping or delivery address. Now, for purchases subject to use tax, purchasers are required to allocate the use tax based upon the place where the person accessing the digital product is located. But there's a tax trap here to be wary of. For transactions subject to sales tax, the statute only allows an interstate commerce exemption when the license are to be used exclusively outside the state of California. As the tax is imposed based upon the mailing address, when the sales tax applies, California is likely to take the position that all licenses sold to a purchaser with a California billing address are subject to tax. This is true even in cases where the vast majority of the licenses are used outside of California. With sales tax rates as high as 11.25% in parts of Los Angeles, it is important to consider the implications of this new tax on future transactions.
The issue of allocating the use tax to users, though, is a new requirement for people with users in California, right? Traditionally
correct.
Not required. All right. So I think I'm pretty much with you up to this point, but when I look at the bill and I see this number of a $5 million threshold, in which it says that if a purchaser buys more than $5 million in software from a seller in a year, the seller can stop collecting sales tax and the buyer is responsible for use tax on the transaction. What's going on here? What are they trying to accomplish? What do we know about how this is supposed to work?
Well, that's correct, Harley. When a seller makes sales in excess of $5 million a year to a single customer, the seller is relieved of their obligation to collect the sales tax once that $5 million threshold is met. At that point, the imposition of tax by statute changes from a sales tax imposed on the seller to a use tax solely imposed upon the buyer. In California, we've never had the characterization of tax change from a sales tax to a use tax based solely on the dollar amount. As a use tax, the buyer will be responsible for the tax. The law provides that the place of use of a digital product shall be the place where any right or power is exercised over a digital product. The right or power to remotely access a digital product is exercised at the place where the person accessing the digital product is located. The law goes on to require that when the purchaser is responsible for the use tax, they must obtain a use tax direct pay permit and remit the use tax to the CDTFA. The economic nexus provisions have been incredibly successful in California. In the five-year period prior to economic nexus, revenue from the sales and use tax program rose 9%. In the five-year period after, revenue rose almost 50%. Audit revenue for assessments was always the number one issue in the audit program, accounting for a third of the revenue before economic nexus was enacted. However, since economic nexus was enacted, assessments for use tax and audits of purchasers has fallen by more than 50%. The point is, after nearly a decade of moving the collection of use tax to sellers with great success by imposing economic nexus provisions, by requiring purchasers to hold a use tax to rate permit, SB 122 will relieve many of the sellers of their obligation to remit the use tax and instead hold purchasers, many of whom have never had a reporting relationship with the CDTFA, solely responsible for the tax.
Are interesting audit statistics. I suspect that's probably similar in a number of states, but I'd really be kind of interested. It'd be an interesting study to collect that data and just see what is the focus of sales and use tax audits now. One question, though. It seems to me that with this threshold, if I make purchases in excess of $5 million in software, does that not, in part, at least deal with the trap for the unwary that you mentioned in terms of the 11.25% in LA, that if I'm over the threshold, then I've switched it to a use tax, and I'm going to be allocating the liability among my California users. Is that right?
That's correct. As a use tax, the purchaser will be required to allocate the licenses according to the place of use, which is the location where the user actually accesses the online program.
So now you have this bifurcation at $5 million that, depending on what kind of taxpayer you are, big, small, medium, may or may not come into play, may give you more control over how you allocate your tax or the amount of tax that you have to pay. But at the same time, you may pick up some other obligations on which you've always been paying sales tax, right? That all of a sudden, right, you're going to have to deal with those on your use tax.
It's going to be quite an interesting implementation for our clients.
Exactly, because it's very different for California. And then it's going to be somewhat different from any number of other states. And the client is just going to have to take that and kind of mesh it into its existing systems and make sure that it's got sufficient controls, that it's not overpaying, nor is it underpaying.
Developing detailed policies and procedures related to procurement will be critical in planning.
Yeah, that's really going to put a burden on purchasers' teams. So, well, you've got a busy period ahead of you to be ready
full
to
employment.
Go by the January 1 deadline. I suspect you may not be celebrating too hard on the 31st unless you're through all your engagements. But so is there anything else we should be aware of with respect to this? What should the listeners be watching for in terms of guidance or information from CDTFA? Because given some of these nuances you've discussed, that's going to be critical, it seems.
Well, the CDTFA is considering substantial revisions to their current regulations and audit manuals, as well as issuing new guidelines that will come in a number of forms to implement the provisions of Senate Bill 122. It's just a few months before SB 122 becomes effective on January 1st, the CDTFA will host a public workshop at 10 a.m. Pacific time on July 21st in Sacramento, where anyone can attend in person, via Teams, or by phone. Following that meeting, the CDTFA will likely issue a discussion paper that identifies the concerns raised and hopefully offers some clarity. We expect the CDTFA to host another meeting, perhaps in late August or early September, before finalizing their proposed changes to policies and procedures. Proposed changes to any regulations will likely be enacted as an emergency regulation, where they will need to be revisited at a later date. But our friend Trista Gonzalez is now the executive director at the CDTFA, so we're in good hands.
All right, so it'd be an emergency regulation we'd expect to see sometime prior to January 1, and then there'll be a final promulgation, but that'll act as authoritative guidance at least up till January 1. Does that sound right?
Correct. There are certain timelines where they can only have an emergency regulation in place for so long before they can seek to have that emergency regulation extended only two times before they have to go through the formal rulemaking process for an official regulation.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. We'll certainly keep our eyes on the CDTFA, and we'll be staying in close touch with you as the guidance unfolds. I mentioned early on that the California is called the Golden State. That is attributable, of course, to the gold rush of 1848 and 1849. Beyond giving the state something to name its football team or one of its football teams, the gold rush was the 49ers were actually quite a big deal in and of itself. It led to the migration of 300,000 people to California, the largest intra-U.S., if you will, migration to that point, unmatched probably until the 1930s. California became a state in 1850, one of the few to go through statehood other than the originals without first being a territory. And it resulted in $2 billion in gold, or 750 tons of gold in California. Most miners, however, didn't really strike it rich. It was the merchants that were part of the gold supply chain that did. I don't think it's an apocryphal story about a man by the name of Brannan, who basically bought all the shovels and pans that he could get his hands on and marked them up considerably and became quite wealthy during the gold rush.
Well, with California taxing digital goods in 2026, it looks like they'll have yet another gold rush for revenue for the state.
There you go. If you're interested in the 1849 gold rush, there's a new book by Nathaniel Philbrook that's coming out in October of this year. So thank you very much for listening. And we'll look forward to seeing you on another podcast soon.
Thanks, Harley.
Thank you, Jim.